صلي على محمد.
Discussing the life history of the Prophet, and the history of the Prophet starts off really from the beginning of the history of mankind, and it builds up. And Allah, in order to prepare the grounds for the coming of the best of creation, obviously Allah wanted it to be a grand entry. He did not want just to be a normal event, irregular occurrence that just happens. He wanted it to be a grand entry, and hence He prepared the grounds for people to know of it before it happens. Allah mentions that in the Quran, that He mentioned the coming of the Prophet in the books that have been revealed before. Injil and Tawrat, Allah has mentioned it there. Now, obviously He didn't mention it for the intellectual amusement. He mentioned it so that they can be prepared for His coming, that they can know that the last Prophet is coming. And hence now we came to this point where Allah has now prepared the whole world in that region to know of the Prophet, to know of His coming from sources that they trust. On one hand, you had the religious people, so these people hear it from their holy books and their teachers. Like for example, the Jews, who hear it from their teachers and rabbis regarding the coming and the appearance of the last Prophet. That's why the Jews are in the area. They moved to Medina, they moved around for getting ready and preparing for the coming of the Prophet. And on the other hand, we see that Allah informed the people through oracles and soothsayers and astrologers, who people used to give a lot of credence to, and they really believed in them. So He gave them the message that the Prophet is coming, and they announced it to the world. So that on one side. Then the Persian emperor, who saw a dream, and that dream was again translated and interpreted to mean that the last messenger is coming. So now with all of these people and all of this news that's all around there, then Allah creates this big event that happens, that a huge army with a big old elephant comes to destroy the Kaaba and is raised to the ground by little birds, which is something out of the ordinary. It's not something that you see every day, you know. Then for Arabs, that was something really out of the ordinary, to see birds fighting elephants, you know, as something that you don't see every day. So what happened is that they remembered it. They knew it, that this is something special. So everything was now making this grand entry, and hence now we come to the birth of the Prophet. The birth of the Prophet, date-wise, all Shia ulama agree that it was on the 17th day of Rabiul Awwal, on the eve of Friday. 17th day of Rabiul Awwal on the eve of Friday. Now amongst the Sunnis, there's a difference of opinion, most of whom say it is the 12th of Rabiul Awwal. There's some of them who say it's the 17th of Rabiul Awwal, some of them say it's the 9th and the 10th. There are different opinions that they have. But usually they say it's the 12th. And amongst the Shias, all the ulama except for one says that it is on the 17th. The rest say that one person, the one alim who is, for example, Sahib al-Kafi, the author of Usul al-Kafi, he says that it's on the 12th. But other than that, all of the ulama agree that it's on the 17th. This birth of the Prophet, and the words of Rasulullah, he himself used to say that I am the result of Ibrahim's dua. On one hand, I am the result, the culmination of the dua that Ibrahim has made, and the reward that Jesus has promised. The good news that Jesus has promised, because Jesus promised good news. He says, I am that good news. And that's what we see in the ayat of the Quran Allah referring to. When Ibrahim made a dua, when he asked for example, when he made the Kaaba and he was making the dua near the Kaaba regarding after Allah says, I accept this from you. So now Ibrahim made a dua, he says, Rabbana wab'ath fihim rasulan minhum yatlu alayhim ayatihi wa yu'allimuhum al-kitaba wal-hikmah. He says, Allah, raise from my progeny a messenger who is going to read your signs to the people and teach them of the book and wisdom. This is the dua that Ibrahim is making 4,000 years ago. Meaning 4,000 years before the birth of the Prophet. And now the Prophet is being born. And Rasulullah is saying that I am the culmination of the dua that my father Ibrahim had made. On one hand, you see Ibrahim is making the dua for the Prophet and it's coming out. This is on one side. On the other side, Esau is giving the good news. And he is giving the forecast, the prophecy of what's going to come. And he says, وَإِذْ قَالَ إِسَىٰ إِبْنَ مَرْيَمْ يَا بَنِي إِسْرَائِيلِ إِنِّي رَسُولُ اللَّهِ إِلَيْكُمْ وَمُبَشِّرًا بِرَسُولٍ يَأْتِ مِنْ بَعْدِ إِسْمَهُ أَحْمَدْ. This is Isa. And Allah is saying, remember when Isa told Bani Israel that I am the messenger of Allah who is the giver of the good news. Mubashiran, giver of the good news of what? Of a prophet that is coming after me. Of a messenger that is coming after me and whose name is going to be Ahmad. This is Esau telling the Jews, the Bani Israel, regarding the coming of the Prophet, the good news that he's giving of the messenger. Rasulullah is saying that I am the fulfillment of Ibrahim's dua and the promise of Jesus that I am that culmination. Rasulullah is now speaking of himself. That night when Rasulullah is being born wasn't a normal night. Many incredible events are happening that night. Many strange things are happening that night. Why? Because of the fact that this messenger who's coming, Rasulullah who's coming, is coming with a label. He's coming with a mission. That mission is what? Allah says, لَيُذْهِرَهُ عَلَىٰ دِينِ كُلِّ, that He is going to overwhelm all other religions. All other religions are going to bow down and submit to the religion of Muhammad. So here he's coming with this sort of enigma that's behind him and that precedes him. So now everyone knows that he's coming like that. And then when he is born, the sound in the sky that says, that everyone can hear, which says, ظَهَرَ حَقٌ وَضَحَكَ الْبَاطِلُ, that the truth has come and the falsehood has vanished. This was the appearance of the Prophet that night. Now let me explain that night what is happening. On one hand, I told you, events are happening that have been noted in history and are aware, and history books explain it as to what happened that night. One, for example, just the events, I will go through some of the events that happened that night. The idols in the Kaaba on that night fell on their face. They all fell from their position on their face. In the morning when everyone came, they said all the idols have been fallen down. They couldn't explain it. There's no shaking of the earth, no earthquake, nothing happens. And you know what? The idols have fallen down on their face. The palace of the king of Iran is trembling. It trembles that night. And 14 of the towers fall down. 14 of the towers in the king, in the palace, fall down on the same night. Lake Save, which has been worshipped by people, for whatever reason, right? They used to worship this lake, right? When they woke up in the morning, it dried up. The lake just dried up, disappeared. They came there, looked at it, it's not there. These are things that are written down in history of those places, of what's happening on that night. No, and I'll just go through this list, right? The Valley of Samawe is another place where there was no water. It was always empty. It's a valley. In the morning was filled with water. Was filled with water. People came and they saw water there. So places where there's no water, there was water. Places where there was water, there was no water. Then on the other hand, we see that the sacred fire of Fars, that was in Iran, that was burning for 1,000 years. 1,000 years, this fire was burning, all of a sudden, went out. And all the people who were in that temple, they just came and said, the fire is out. For 1,000 years, it never went out. 1,000 years they kept it alive. Not even a single second did it go out. And on that night, all of a sudden, without any reason, it goes out. And then, after that, the wisest of the magicians or the Magian clerics in Iran, when he has a dream, and in that dream he sees Arab horses and Arab camels riding and invading the territory of the king of Iran, taking over. He comes out, he wakes up and sees that something has happened in this night, that by which the kingdom, that this huge kingdom, I mean the Persian Empire was a huge thing then. That was, as I said, the superpower of the time. People used to get the approval of the king of Iran before they did anything. Yes. Right? And anyone who wants to be elected anywhere had to go to Iran and wear a yarmulke before he gets elected or stands for elections. Right? So that's how it used to happen. The king of Iran, he used to give the approval or the nod for everyone around the world, and that kingdom is being shaken this night. That kingdom is being shaken this night. Now there are many signs that you can read in books, but one of the, you know, like for example, the signs that the people who used to get information from the jinn, the soothsayers, the oracles, they lost their power that night. They woke up and they couldn't do what they used to do. For example, you know, they would use their force, right, you know, to make the chai, you know, right, and put the tea on the thing, you know, and they're like trying to do it now, it doesn't work, right, their power is gone, they all notice it, and they're like, you know, asking each other, hey, did you lose your power, did you lose your power, yes, we all did, all the powers are lost, this is happening in that night. La ilaha illallah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Now these are events that are happening on earth, right? These are events that are happening on earth. Now, when the Prophet is being born, in this night that he is being born, you see that Shaitan gets to know about it also. Because Shaitan sees that his information is being blocked. No one has any more information anymore. The information that he was privy to, that he used to use to inform his followers so that they can take that information and give it or help it or use it in order to make the lives of others difficult. You see, those powers are no more. That information is gone. So he sends out his people, his shayateen, all over, he sends them out in order to look to see what is going on. Why is this not there anymore? And they all go out and they have no clue at all. Now this riwayat, this hadith has been mentioned by Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam. So Shaitan is frustrated this night. Shaitan is just completely frustrated. He says, nothing is working out. What's going on? All our plans, all our mechanisms are not functional. There's something wrong here. So no one gets an answer for him. So he himself says, okay, you know what? I must do this myself. So Shaitan, as I said, Imam is saying, he was used to going to the heavens, to the skies, samawat, right? In order to intercept the messages that are coming down. So Shaitan was, he used to go until the birth of Isa, he used to go to the seventh sky. But then after the birth of Isa, the top three skies were blocked. So now he could have gone to the fourth sky. So now, as he tries to go to the skies and to the samawat, you see that the path is blocked. He doesn't have access. He then looks at this and he says, what's going on here? I had access till yesterday. He says, yes, you cannot go. You are blocked from now onwards. You don't have access anymore to go into the skies. Shaitan is like mesmerized. He says, but why? Why don't I have access? I had access before. Why are you stopping me now? He says, we can't tell you. Who can tell me? He says, go and ask Jibreel. So he says, all right, let me ask Jibreel. Where is he? So he comes and finds Jibreel where? Outside of Makkah. He comes to him and says, what's going on? Why aren't the shayateen and the demons and my people allowed to go and come near this area? Why is my access blocked into the heavens? So Jibreel tells him, now listen, something is happening tonight by which no access is given to anyone. He said, but what is happening tonight? You see, my friends, understand this. It is something sacred is happening. Something that Allah wants to happen. Meaning, this is Allah's main plan. Allah's main plan is being unfolded. When Allah unfolds His plan and a sensitive time comes like this, by which a pure birth is being taken place, a light is coming into this world, then obviously Allah doesn't want any sort of impurity, any sort of darkness in the vicinity. My friends, Makkah was blocked to all media. No media of Shaitan could have gone inside there. Media access was blocked. No one was able to go inside. Now, Shaitan is inquiring, what is going on? What happened? So Jibreel says, listen, Allah's messenger, the last of His messenger, the light that He has made, because you see, Jibreel and Shaitan used to be in heaven, remember? They used to hang out there. So for old time's sake, you're probably saying, hey, listen, just let you know that this is what's going on, right? The last messenger, see, you know that light, same light that you and I used to see and all that, that is now being brought into this world. That light is now being brought into this world, and Allah has kept everyone away from that. He doesn't want anyone to witness that who is not pure and who is not sincere. When Shaitan hears this, now you got to give it to Shaitan, right? You see, sometimes, you know, people really don't look at things the right way. You know, Allah mentions Shaitan. Shaitan obviously is not a good character. Right? I'm sure you all agree with me, right? Shaitan is not a good character. I mean, it's not someone like you, for example, you would like to make his friend, right? You don't want to be his friend, right? But, you know, it's not that Shaitan has all evil qualities. It's not that. Shaitan has some good qualities also. And that's why Allah is mentioning Shaitan in the Quran, because there are qualities that, you know, you just need to admire. You just need to admire that. For example, you know, people have a very ignorant way of looking at things. They're very narrow-minded way of looking at things. Right? For example, they would look at someone for being a kafir and shut him off and close him off and not learn any lesson from his life or anything from his life. Sometimes people do that. You see, a lot of people, you see, are narrow-minded. They take Islam and their Islam is such that they don't actually learn from everywhere. You know, they only pick and choose where they want to learn from. They don't learn from kuffar or the lives of kuffar. You know, they don't learn from other things. They just say, okay, no, you know, we should not learn from kuffar. Just learn from the Quran. Just learn from hadith and that's it. We don't need anything else. Right? Whereas, the Quran itself is describing shaitan. Is telling us about shaitan. And, you know, letting us know, hey, look, this is shaitan. This is how he is. This is what he does. This and that. In so many details. It's like, for example, you can write a biography of shaitan by looking at what Quran is saying. Right? You can actually write a biography of shaitan, how much Allah has expounded on shaitan. So, shaitan is not a believer. Shaitan is not a prophet. Shaitan is not even good. You say he's a kafir. Allah says that. وَكَانَ مِنَ الْكَافِرِينَ. He's a kafir. He's an infidel. Allah, so why are you telling us all these details about an infidel? Why are you telling all these details about an infidel? What's all this for? I mean, you know, why can't you just talk about Rasulullah and why can't you just talk about Imam Ali and that's it? No shaitan. We don't need to know about shaitan. Now, can anyone say Allah is making a mistake here? Tell me. We need to open our eyes, right? And now we need to really understand how knowledge works. What is knowledge? My friends, understand this. The reason Allah is mentioning about shaitan and describing him in the Quran. There's a reason Allah mentions about Namrud and Fir'aun. And there's a reason the history is, you know, full of references to very, you can say, unsmart people, like the Khulafa. Right? Like the people, you know, who took over the Khilafah from Imam Ali. You know, they are obviously, you know, members of the society, but not too bright. But there's references to them. Things about that. We read about them. We learn about them. Why are we learning about them? It's not because, you know, my friends, they are bad and they have some evil in them. But really, there are certain things that you really need to admire about such people. Really, you need to admire about some people. Even Imam Ali admired such people. We have references of that in Nahjul Balagha, how he admired such people. And he, you know, said that. One of the things that you need to admire about such people is the fact that they are so doggone convicted about their beliefs. Look at them. They believe in whatever they do. And whatever they're doing is some sort of rubbish, but they do believe in it. They have conviction in it. They are so convicted regarding it that they will spend all the time and energy for that. Really, I have gone to gym with many youngsters and many youth for many times who have made great resolutions that we need to get in shape for Imam Zaman. You know, and it all starts and it ends in 2 weeks. Their resolution fizzles out. Their gym the only thing that remains is their gym membership that they're paying every month. Right? And here's our resolution to do what? To get in shape for our imam. That's how much we believe in it. And then when you look at these people, the kuffar who are in those positions of stardom and all these things, you look at these, for example, movie stars and actors and all these things who, for a role in a movie, they would lose 50 pounds or they would put on 50 pounds. And you're like, that guy, you know, how's he doing it? How is he doing that? But my friends, here it is. That's where you need to admire them. Man, they're determined about their kufr. They are so determined about doing their kufr. That's the way it is. Sometimes you need to, that's why Imam Ali admired them also to us and say, if I had the people, if the people, my people believed in me the way the soldiers of Muawiyah believed in him, this war would have been over a long time ago. In other words, the soldiers of Muawiyah had more conviction and had a better following to Muawiyah than the soldiers of Imam Ali did to him. Now my friends, really, this is admiration. Imam Ali is saying, hey, look at that, that's better. Right? This is, my friends, some of the things, sometimes we need to open our eyes and learn from things and understand things in a wholesome way, in a much more broader way, so that we can understand things better. On that night, we see what happened. Iblis comes there. He is blocked access to come into Makkah. He asks why, what happened? And Jibreel says, because the Messenger of Allah is being born on this night. So now Jibreel, he should have understood. He knows who the Prophet is. He has seen the light of the Prophet in the heavens. He knows that, you know, how pure it is, that there's no way that it's going to become tainted or misguided in any way possible. So Satan, but doesn't give up. You know what he asked Jibreel? He says, tell me, Jibreel, you know, we've been there for a long time, you know. You and me, we go a long way back. Tell me, Jibreel, is there any way I can misguide him? Is there any way that I can get to him? Any way that I can get to him? You see this? Jibreel knows, Shaitan knows he cannot misguide him. Shaitan knows that he has no way to the Prophet, but he doesn't give up. You gotta admire that about him. He doesn't give up. He's like, oh, you know what? Is there any way I can get to him? Jibreel says, no. He's like, you know, I mean, it's worth a try, you know. It's worth a try just asking, hypothetically speaking, no, you can't. You know, there's no way. What are you talking about? This is, you know, you know that, right? There's no way you're going to get even close to him. You know, you can't even get close to him. He's like the one. So now what happened? Jibreel, after he says that, Shaitan listens to it, and now Shaitan again, see this, gotta admire about him. Things that you need to admire about Shaitan, he doesn't give up. Now Shaitan says, well, okay, I can't get to him, I understand that, but tell me, can I get to his followers? Can I get to his followers? People who will follow him, his ummah, can I get to his ummah, his followers, his nation? And Jibreel looks at him square in the eye, and says, yes, you can get to them. Shaitan gives a big smile, shows all his teeth. Shaitan says, that's all I need to know. That's all I need to know. Friends, really, now obviously hadith speak about this, as to how Shaitan and why he smiled and how he's going to get to them. What is the way to get to them? Simple in the hadith, not has nothing to do with the birth of the Prophet, but according to hadith, how does Shaitan get to people? He says, if the followers, you know, this is what Rasulullah had said, right? Rasulullah had said these two things at the time of his death. Two things he said. He says, I am satisfied for one thing, and I'm afraid of another thing. He says, what are you satisfied for? He says, I'm satisfied for the fact that Allah will not treat my nation like other nations. In other words, that the prophets of the previous nations used to be afraid that their people are going to go back to idol worship, to idolatry, to being a mushrik. He says, that's one thing that I'm not afraid of. My nation, Muslims, will never become idol worshippers. Muslims will never become idol worshippers. my nation. This is something that Rasulullah said, I am satisfied with. I know that. I know that my nation will never become idol worshippers. Then Rasulullah, what are you afraid of? He says, I'm afraid because I'm afraid of the fact that my nation and my people, I'm afraid that they will worship the dunya. They will worship dunya, this world. And that is how shaitan is going to misguide them. If my people do not worship dunya, do not fall in love with dunya, then you know what? There's no way that shaitan can misguide them. But if they fall in love with dunya, then now they're in the hands of shaitan. He explains that at his deathbed. And this is what shaitan is asking at the time of the birth of the Prophet. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Now, just to make it short, as this happened, now Amina, there's a hadith from Amina who explains the situation, what happened. When Amina was in the pangs of pregnancy, and Fatima bint Asad, the mother of Imam Ali, is with her. She is there with her, she sees that, and hence, when Fatima bint Asad is in the room, she sees a light in the room. She sees a nur, a light in the room becomes so bright that she can't see anything. Now she's afraid it might be a magician or it might be someone who wants to hurt Amina, because the assault and attempts on her life have already been there and she has experience of that. So she becomes afraid. Fatima bint Asad becomes afraid and goes outside to look for someone for help. And as she goes outside, she finds Abu Talib, her husband. He's there. And as she finds him and he tells what is happening, she says, I see a light in the room. What should I think of it? I see a light that is blinding me. And Amina is lying there. What should I think of that? What is it? Then the answer that Abu Talib gave confused Amina, but made her relax so much, comforted so much, that she had no fear after that. You know what Abu Talib told her at that moment when he said that? He says, my wife, don't worry. Don't worry. He says, why not? It's because just take this and comfort yourself. He says, what is that? He says, 30 years later, you will see the same light in your room. So don't worry. And when Fatima bint Asad heard that, then she's like, okay, I have no worries now. I have no worries now. Now, while she was gone and she now came inside, in that time, Amina says, I saw Fatima bint Asad leave and I saw this light overwhelm me, and then I saw, there are many things she says, a long hadith. I'm not going to go into the long hadith, just a few things out of that. She says, I saw four women who came to me. Four women, four of these women from the, who were the most pious, the most chosen woman by Allah, came to me. They all came around me and said, do not worry. I saw that there's a bridge that came from the heavens towards me, a bridge of light that came from the heavens towards me. And that, in that time, and all these events are happening. And these are things that have been mentioned in the Ziyarat of Amina. Any one of you who have gone for Umrah, or who have gone for Hajj, if you have gone and recited the Ziyarat of Hazrat Amina, that is in Makkah, if you recite the Ziyarat there, you will see that these are things that are written in that Ziyarat. For example, it is said, Assalamu alayka ya man sataha min jabineha nurun Sayyidul Anbiya, O you who, in whose forehead was the light of the Prophet was shown. It says, فَأَضَاءَتْ بِهِ الْأَرْضُ وَالسَّمَاءُ, and it has enlightened the earth and the heavens. السَّلَامُ عَلَيْكَ يَا مَنْ نَزَلَتْ لِأَجْلِهَا الْمَلَائِكَةُ, O you for whom the angels have come down for. وَضَرَبَتْ لِأَجْلِهَا هُجَبُ الْجَنَّةُ, and for you the curtains of the Jannah have been brought down to the earth. This is the Ziyarat of Amina. This is all describing what is happening at the birth of the Prophet. And this is the ziyarat that we read of Amina. And as we are reading this ziyarat, and as we are looking at it, she is describing this, that how this happens. And she said that I have heard that labor and that pregnancy is very difficult, especially the first child. Because people and women, you know, obviously will tell each other, hey, the first one is the most difficult and all these things. So what happened? I heard many of these things. But this child that came from me was such that I have never felt any pain in his birth. I did not even feel pain in his birth when he came out. My friends, this is why it is said, Imam Jafar Sadiq explains this and says that the Messenger of Allah, he is rahmatan lil alameen. How is it possible that he does not have rahmat and mercy on his own mother? Right? This is that bird that she is describing. And she says, as he was born, all I saw next as the light dissipated, all I saw next is that my son was prostrate down with one hand on the ground, the forehead on the ground, and one hand towards the sky, and he was saying, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. And giving his testimony to Allah. The birth of the Prophet. My friends, the birth of the Prophet is a miraculous happening. It is a mercy on all of mankind. Birth was not a person being born or a prophet or a messenger being born, but it is a new legacy for human beings, a new course of humanity. How and what it is, it will now come soon. How this, and he is changing the course of humanity, what will happen? I will explain it inshallah. But this is something to really look at. How did he change everything? Change the course of even the other prophets who came. Now his course is different. And his method, and because of his existence, now the whole way that Allah deals with people is different. It has changed because of him, because of his birth. How does this happen? Inshallah, that will come. And because of the fact that this was the night for the Shahadat of Bibi Khadija also. You know, a few words I'll mention. I will not be able to do justice for this night. But in due course, as we are talking about the history of the Prophet, there is going to come a huge chapter where she is a major part of prophethood. And inshallah, we will try to do justice there in trying to speak about her and her relationship and her contribution to Allah's message and Allah's cause. That will come later. But of the women, many women in the history of the Prophet have been a crucial part of the Prophet's life and his message. And no one, really no one, can take the position of his wife Khadija. No one can take her position. Allah has referenced her role in the Prophet's life in Surah Ad-Duha. Go and read Surah Ad-Duha. He has referenced her help in Surah Ad-Duha, and he has mentioned it as something that he has blessed the Prophet with. He has given this so that the Prophet has nothing to complain about. And one of the things that he has given to the Prophet, by which he says that he has made him, he has blessed him, he has given him so much blessing that he should be satisfied with that, one of those blessings is Khadija. One of those blessings is Khadija. He says, have we not found you wanting? a'ilan fa'aghna. Did we not find you that you were in need? Physical need, you know, material need. You were in need. And you were wanting. And that we made you wealthy and without need. He referenced that. He says, wow, we gave you Khadija, and Khadija is someone who has made you independent of everyone else. My friend, what does that mean, inshallah, when we go through the history of Khadija and her role and her actual history, then you will come to appreciate it. What she meant for the Prophet and why he used to cry in remembrance of her. Whenever he used to remember Khadija, tears would come out of his eyes for the love that he had for her, for the immense respect that he had for her, the honor that he had for her. He was humbled by her devotion, by her uncompromising faith and dedication that she had for the Prophet. You know, if the Prophet does something, if Rasulullah does something, he is not doing it of his own will. He's not doing it because it's his opinion or this is how he feels. It's not something that he feels that he brings out and expresses. Ma yantiqu anil hawa in huwa illa wahyun yuha. There's nothing that comes out of the mouth of the Prophet or is expressed by the Prophet except that it is revelation that is revealed by Allah. If Rasulullah is loving someone, it's because Allah has put that in his heart. If Rasulullah respects someone, it's because Allah has put that in his heart. Friends, this is what Hazrat Khadija meant for Rasulullah. And what she did for that, as I said, I will not do injustice if I say anything right now. We will be able to speak about her as her stage and her chapter comes in his history, so that truly we can understand her role and what she actually did for the Prophet and what she meant for the Prophet and how important she was for the Prophet. But just right now, the love that the Prophet had for Khadija, now you can just understand this. Khadija has given up everything for the Prophet, everything that you can ask for. There's no one who can give up more than what Khadija has given up for the Prophet. Sacrifice everything. There's nothing in her name now. There's nothing in her name. She has gone from the wealthiest woman in the Arab world to becoming someone who has nothing in her name. Nothing. There is nothing that she owned. She came to that position. And on the deathbed, she's lying there. The pain that she's going through is difficult. It's hard for her to breathe. She's taking deep heavels of breath in order to keep herself alive. On her deathbed, Rasulullah stands over her, comes down next to her, and she now is mustering up courage to say something to Rasulullah. The final words of Khadija to the Prophet: just give yourself and inshallah give your condolences in this way, my friends. Here's Khadija. The last thing that she wants to say, she's mustering up all the courage that she can. Everything that she wants, she just wants to say one more thing to Rasulullah. She wants to say one more thing to Rasulullah. Can she say something? She's trying to get her breath together. Rasulullah comes near her, tries to comfort her, and says, take it easy, my wife. Take it easy, Khadija. Take it easy, Umme Fatima. You are fine. Do not worry. Here it is fine. She wants to say something. And you know what comes out of her? She says, Ya Rasulullah. Ya Rasulullah. I have not done injustice to you. I have not done justice to you. There's more that you deserve from me. There's more that you deserve from me. I have done injustice to you. There's more that you deserve from me. If I have one more breath, if I have an ounce of energy that is left in me, then I want to use that in your pleasure. In your pleasure, I want to use that. When Rasulullah heard this, his heart began shaking. His heart began to shake. This is that lady who has devoted everything for Rasulullah and Allah's cause. And as she's leaving, she's saying, if I had a minute more to live, I would give that to you, O Muhammad. I would give that to you, O Muhammad. Can you imagine this? This is that mother who has trained her child to be the same way. Don't you remember Fatima's deathbed? When Ali is on top of Fatima, and Ali is saying to Fatima, tell me, Fatima, tell me. And all Fatima is saying, Araditani ya Abul Hasan, are you pleased with me, O Ali? Are you pleased with me, O Ali? The same way that Khadija has given the last sentiment before she left to the Prophet is the way that Fatima is saying to Abul Hasan and Imam Ali.